නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So probably you can remember that we were discussing Mahamalunkya Putta Sutta or Mahamalunkya Sutta, which is available in the Majjhima Nikaya. This is the 64th Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. And the interesting point is here Buddha wants to explain about the five lower fetters, what we call as the Aurambhagiya Sanyojana. And probably you know that there are 10 Sanyojanas, 10 fetters. They are the ones binding us to the whole samsara. And among them, five is considered as the five lower fetters. Meaning, so they bind us to the lower realms. To the hell realm, to the human realm, and the heavenly realms, and they are considered as the lower realms. And even if one go beyond that, still they are bound to come back again, reborn in the hell realm or human realm or the devil realm. On the other hand, there are five other fetters which are available till one becomes an arahant, fully enlightened. And even if one has abandoned completely the five lower realms, it is another process to abandon the five upper fetters, Uddhambhagya Sanyojana, which is actually helping to bind the people into the higher realms, like the Rupa Brahmaloka, that's the form Brahma realms, and the formless Brahma realms. So basically, so these are the 10 fetters typically discussed in the Dhamma, and here Buddha is emphasizing certain important aspects of the lower fetters or Aurambhagiya Sanyojana, and there he wants to discuss this topic with the monks, and he is asking from the monks, do you know about the five lower fetters? And their answer is given by a venerable called Malunkya Putta. He seems to be an intelligent person, but has missed a very crucial point which Buddha wants to highlight. So his answer was barely based upon the names of the fetters, as the five lower fetters, that is identity view, that is sakkāditti, doubt, vichikicchā, adherence to rules and observances, sīlabbata parāmāsa, sensual desire, that means kāmarāga, ill will, is the patiga. So these are the five lower fetters, and he simply named them and tell them to the Buddha. So Buddha was not satisfied with the answer, and so he refute, basically telling that even a little kid, an infant, may be then free from lower fetters. If we simply say these are the fetters that we are talking. So the idea is, even if a kid is there, an infant is there, there is another interesting point we need to understand, that is the anusaya. Anusaya is the latent tendencies, where hidden tendencies are there in the mind. Even though currently there are no fetters active, still the potential is there. When the conducive environment, the reasons are available, causes are available, so these fetters start activating. So that's the issue. So one can develop some amount of samadhi and keep the these fetters or hindrances in a little subsided way, but still it doesn't guarantee that one has completely overcome them, completely uprooted them. So that is the difficulty in the practice, that we have to maintain this absence or disappearance or inactive state for a long, long time, and it has to go through a fair process, a long process. Then only one would safely say that one is completely free from these fetters. So therefore, it is very important to understand that mere understanding about these fetters is not enough, and a thorough understanding is also necessary. So Buddha therefore explain that point to the monks, telling that the, for example, the young child, a tender infant, doesn't have any of these ideas. Say he doesn't have any identity. He doesn't know his name. He can't speak, and he has no idea about the others. Then how can there be identity view? And on the other hand, he doesn't have any idea about the teachings, the Buddha, the Dhamma, Sangha, and the training. He doesn't have any idea. Then how can there be a doubt? So basically, the point is, still he has the potential to doubt in the future. So that is not eliminated. So that tendency is there, that latent disposition is there. So that is the issue. So one can grow that identity view, one can grow various doubts as one is growing, one becomes an adult. So then that indicates that it is available as a seed. So as one is continuing one's life, these things are accumulating, these things are very much like continuing. So otherwise, so that's why the reason that we have to go through a kind of a sophisticated method to overcome them. Now, last time we discussed in detail about the identity view, that is the Sakkaya Ditti. So I thought of discussing the what we call as Vichikiccha, that is the doubt. Now, so in order to discuss the doubt, I thought of taking some other sutta that is called Sabbasava Sutta. Probably you might have heard about the Sabbasava Sutta, and that is another interesting sutta available in the Majjhima Nikaya. And there Buddha talks about 16 kinds of doubts. So those doubts are very much self-centered doubts. Basically, we think based upon a person, a self, an individual. I am a male, I am a female, I am young, I am old, my name is this, my social security number is this, my identity card number is this, my passport number is this, I am so and so. So like that, we have various parameters, attributes to define us as an individual, and the whole social system, whole governance and all that education. So everything is very much like emphasizing that, approving that. And as a result of that, we have this Sakkaya Ditti, the identity view. Based upon that, now we think. When we think based upon that personality view, I-centered thinking actually leads to many other defilements as well, actually promote many other defilements as well. Now, doubts, here Buddha discuss in the Sabbasava Sutta, are fairly explained with respect to that I-centered or self-centered thinking. So, for example, Buddha mentioned related to the past, there are 5 types of doubts. Have I been in the past? Have I not been in the past? What have I been in the past? How have I been in the past? From what state into what state did I change? Now, there is I in the past? So, now I am available, now I am doubtful whether I was available in the past. How have I been in the past? Oh, didn't I? Haven't I been in the past? Now, I am available right now, but how about my past? How about my past lives? Did I exist or didn't I exist? And then, what have I been in the past? What was my form? Am I a deva? Am I a human? Am I, an animal? So, what is the form? And then, how have I been in the past? Did I suffer during the past? Or did I do everything in a more peaceful, happy manner? Or did I go through any kind of difficulties? So how I appeared in the past? What was the experience I went through? What are the experiences that I went through? Now, if I was there in the past, from which state I came to that state. Now you can see, I mean, these things are in a way sometimes appear like philosophical, appear like spiritual, but unfortunately based upon an entirely wrong view, that is the identity view. I exist, I am here, I am available, so I am an individual. So did I exist the past or didn't I exist in the past? So basically that I-centered thinking is now, you can see, leading to various other complications, various other complicated doubts, complexities, entanglements, and say perplexities. So all these doubtful states are there because of this wrong thinking. So that is with respect to the past. And again, Buddha mentioned in the Sabbasava Sutta with respect to the future. Five doubts are related to the future. Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? From what state into what state will I change in the future? So Buddha mentioned now, so I am available now, so how about my future life? Will I exist in the future? So am I completely going to become annihilated after this life? So am I going to exist after the passing away of this life? Or even within this life, okay, now I am talking, how about my next hour? Will I going to exist or will I die? How long I am going to live? So I am existing right now. I am talking right now. I am hearing, I am listening right now. So how about my future? Will I be able to do something in the future? So basically like that, so this existing I is now thinking based upon that I-centered or self-identity view, and he encourages various doubts. So that way of thinking is encouraging various doubts. Shall I not be in the future? So someone may say that you are simply the body, you don't have anything else. So once this body passed away, so you annihilate. So then probably you get the doubt, okay, so is this the last life? Is it true? Is this whole kind of a material process? So once this body pass away, everything disintegrate, there is no more existence. So you can have a lot of doubts, and people are talking about this. They are arguing about this. And one group of people have one way of ideas and various others have different other ideas. So there can be a huge argument, a conflict arising due to these various doubts. And what shall I be in the future? And am I going to... So once after I die, so who am I going to be? What shall I be in the future? Will I exist as a human, or will I exist as an animal, or like that? So what is my form? What is the state? And how shall I be in the future? Am I going to suffer? Am I going to eternal hell? Or am I going to eternal bliss? Am I going to have a temporary other states? So likewise, various doubts we can have. And from what state into what state will I change in the future? So after I become someone, after that what happened? After that person pass away, after that individual, after that being pass away, so what's going to happen? So various doubts. You can see the mind can complicate the subject and think in many different ways. And therefore, so this is a kind of a never-ending type of process where many, many doubts are available, either with respect to the past or with respect to the future. Now, they are five each, mainly. So, altogether 10 doubts are there. Now, Buddha mentioned with respect to the present, there are 6 doubts. So, the first one is interesting, am I? Or am I not? So, is I am exist? Am I existing right now? So, you can have kind of a real puzzle regarding yourself. So, who am I? What am I? How am I? So, am I or am I not? What am I? Who am I? How am I? So, various present moment related or present existence related, present life related, various doubts can happen. So, appear like philosophical but really puzzling, really arising or arousing various doubts and perplexities in the mind. Ultimately, one can go even mad by this kind of thinking. And the last one is called, when did this being come into? So that means, I am existing right now. I mean, from where did I come to this? How did I come to this? Or when did I come to this form? And where it will go? After passing away this life, where will I go? So there are six kinds of doubts. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? When did this being come into? And whether it will go? Where it will go? So basically, so these kinds of altogether 16 doubts are there. And Buddha mentioned, so these doubts actually lead to six kinds of wrong views. Now, after thinking any of these ways, or many of these ways, one can end up with kind of fixations, kind of wrong views. And in the Sabbasava Sutta, so Buddha say they are of six. Basically, so these six doubts, when he attends unwisely in this way, one of six views arises in him. So I am referring Sabbasava Sutta. The view, self exists for me, arises in him as true and established. So that means, so he is wondering, he was doubtful, and he was thinking, he was pondering, he was going through a lot of thinking, overthinking, and ultimately he end up with a fixed view, that is, self exists for me, there is self, there I am. And on the other hand, no self exists for me. So this one, no self exists for me. So that is another view. And then I perceive self with self. Now I am a self, I exist right now. So now I am perceiving that existing self. Or I perceive not self with the self. So these are kind of complications in a way. Currently, I have a self, but now I am experiencing not self. And the other one is, I perceive self with not self. So currently I have no self, but now I am experiencing self. So otherwise Buddha say he has another little complicated view. So it is this self of mine that speaks, act or feels, experience here and there, the result of good and bad actions. But this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. Another eternal view is there. So basically these are various speculations, various doubts, leading to kind of fixations in the mind, wrong views, strong adherences in the mind. And therefore Buddha mentioned this speculative view, because it is called the thicket of views, the wilderness of views, the contortion of views, the vacillation of views, the fetter of views. So you can see some complicated thinking patterns ultimately take us into a vulnerability, to a huge, strong adherence in the mind, so it is very difficult to overcome. So doubts are, in that sense, Buddha metaphorically say that it's very much like a muddy water in the dark, where you can't see anything. Suppose that one wants to see one's face in the water, so then the water has to be very clean, very clear and still. So then only one can see one's face, one's reflection. But on the other hand, if it is muddy and again it is kept in the dark, then you can't see anything. So the mind which is filled with skeptical doubt, mind filled with various other, say, perplexities, are very much like stuck. You can't go forward. You are stuck. And similarly, Buddha mentioned in another sutta, as another simile, so one is lost in the desert. Assume that you are going to a kind of a trip, and you have to pass or cross a desert, and there you lost your way. And there is no GPS, there is no Google, so nothing is there. So basically you lost altogether, and there you can't see the any signs of the inhabitants. So complete loss. Then now you stuck in the middle, where you don't know what to do, to which direction to travel, where to continue. So that kind of a stuck experience, that kind of a hindrance is there in the doubt, vichikiccha. So that's another simile that Buddha gives for this vichikiccha. So you can see it's a kind of a state in the mind which is fairly difficult, and it can happen at many different levels. So we discussed with respect to our own speculations, it can happen and it can lead to a lot of confusion. So that is one area. And on the other hand, it can happen at another level. So that is another aspect of this vichikiccha. Now, five wildness in the mind, what we call as pancha cheto khila, is another area Buddha mentioned available as the doubts. Pancha cheto khila. That is also available, explained in the Majjhima Nikaya, Cheto Khila Sutta. Let me see whether I can show it to you. Majjhima Nikaya Mula Pannasaka Sihanada. So this is Cheto Khila Sutta in this number 16, wilderness in the heart, wilderness in the mind. So that bhikkhus, any bhikkhu who has not abandoned five wilderness in the heart and not severed five shackles in the heart should come to growth, increase and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline, that is impossible. So these are the five wilderness in the heart. So five wilderness in the heart. So those are basically based on the doubt, vichikiccha. Here bhikkhu doubtful, uncertain, undecided and unconfident about the teacher. So that is about the Buddha. Sattari kankati vichikicchati nadi muchati. So in the Pali it is mentioned as Sattari khankati vichikicchati nadi muchati na sampasidati. So his mind is not straight. He hasn't have enough faith on the Buddha as a teacher, and he's not certain about his enlightenment. He's not certain about his own realization. And his mind is still wavering. He's not decided either to follow Buddha or not to follow him. And he's not confident. So when one's mind is doubtful about the teacher, then how can one follow his teaching? So that's the next one actually. And thus his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving. As his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving, that is the first wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. Now, as I said, all these doubts are very much like wilderness in the mind. Kind of, they makes the mind kind of a barren land. There are nothing is possible to grow. One is completely stuck, one stagnates, and basically can't grow at all. So this is the kind of wilderness, and as a result of that, he can't arouse any practice, he has no devotion, he can't persevere the existing situations, and he don't do any kind of striving for the growth, because he's stuck, he has no confidence about the Buddha. Now similarly, Buddha mentioned, again a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided and unconfident about the Dhamma. So Buddha has taught the Dhamma and one is doubtful about the Dhamma. So as a result of that, his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving. And his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving. That is the second wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So, time to time it may be possible that we may come across various doubts related to the Dhamma. So that is where we need to further investigate, further discuss with the others about these doubts so that one can eliminate them. But keeping them and again harboring them and strengthening them and ultimately have no confidence at all is where we become complete, get into a kind of a complete wilderness. Where we don't know how to overcome that. So we give up the practice, we give up the confidence, we give up the trust. And ultimately one going nowhere, basically. One altogether give up the practice. Now the third one is with respect to the Sangha. Again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided and unconfident about the Sangha. Now there are followers of the Buddha, there are followers of the teachings and who are the practitioners, the co-practitioners. So the one can have doubts about them. Are they doing the right thing? Are they really going to attain what Buddha has taught? Or are they simply sort of misleading others, so they themselves are very much like misled? They are simply showing off, or they are simply misleading. So like that, one can have doubts about the co-practitioners, about the Sangha. So because one is not yet have enough confidence, they have doubts. So these doubts are, therefore you can see that it is not mere with respect to one's own existence, but now it is very much like diversified. It is going to many other directions about the Buddha as the teacher, and again the Dhamma that he's teaching, and about the others who are practicing that, the Sangha. And then the fourth one. Again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided and unconfident about the training. That is the practice. Now, suppose you are practicing meditation, and probably if one is saying your method is wrong, this doesn't lead to liberation, this doesn't lead to full understanding, this will not take you to anywhere. Now you start doubtful about it. And it may be possible sometimes we get into wrong paths or we get into wrong practices. So it's also possible. So if someone is indicating that, that is also something to consider. So it doesn't mean that we have to accept everything wholeheartedly, blindly. We always have to investigate. So that investigation is something that Buddha encouraged. But the problem here is that we are not capable of removing the doubt. Suppose that we are practicing and someone is telling that your meditation is not good, you are practicing wrongly and you better correct it. But if we don't know how to correct it, and if we don't know how to meet another teacher, another Kalyana Mitta, or we read ourselves, or we listen ourselves to various other sermons, teachings, so that we are able to overcome the doubt. So if we are not working on that, so then ultimately we start doubtful about our own training, our own practice, and ultimately we give it up. And we don't have the wholehearted ambition or wholehearted striving attitude to continue, because I am doubtful about my own practice. And on the other hand, when I am doubtful about my own practice, then how can I instruct another person? It is impossible. Because I am not wholeheartedly practicing, I am doubtful about my own practice, then definitely I can't say someone else to follow it. And on the other hand, so when I am practicing kind of half-heartedly, then I am not definitely being able to get the full results, because I am not putting enough. I am not putting 100%. I am not practicing wholeheartedly. Instead, I am practicing half-heartedly because I have certain doubts. Like I am stuck at certain areas. So there we can see this doubt is actually detrimental to our practice, and it basically avoids us avoids our progress. And that is why it is very much like here Buddha mentioned it as a cheto khil, wilderness in the mind. So you can't grow. And on the other hand, till one is uncertain about one's own practice, one has to follow a teacher, one has to read, one has to listen, because one is not confident about one's own practice. So typically it is said, so this whole doubts are abandoned when one becomes a stream winner, a sotapanna. So then he is confident. So till that, we all have these doubts. So that's why one has to participate in discussions, one has to participate in the Dhamma sermons, listening to them, read them, and search other teachers and look at or ponder about it. So likewise, because still one is not confident about one's own path, not confident about one's own practice. If one is confident about one's own practice, then he's so thorough and firm about it. He has no doubts at all, and he know what to do in the future. Even without someone else's help, he know what to do. So that's the key feature, one of the key features in the Sotapanna, stream winner. Without someone else's help, he know how to attain the full liberation. And he has certain certainty or confidence about his own practice. His own practice has given some concrete results, and now one is experiencing them, enjoying them. As a result of that, he's confident. So that is the fourth kind of doubt that Buddha mentioned, the cheto khila, the wilderness in the mind. And the fifth one is another interesting one, where again a bhikkhu is angry and displeased with his companions in the holy life, resentful and callous towards them. And thus his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving. And his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance and striving. That is the fifth wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. Now this is not really related to the doubt, but it can have certain influence coming from the doubts. Say for example, you are living with a group. Other co-practitioners, either sometimes probably they are not very much like appreciative to you, or they are not helping to you. They are not putting you in the proper place, so they are not respecting you. Or probably their practice is different than what you think. You want them to behave in such a way, but they behave in a different way. and you want them to agree with you, but they are not. So likewise, various conflicts can happen when we are living as a community, as a group, as a team, and even within the family. Husband and wife can have various conflicts. Parents and children can have various conflicts. A group, a team can have various conflicts or varying ideas. Or within the Sangha community also, so different ideas may be available, different viewpoints may be available. Again, they have their own fixations, their own views, and they can now adhere to their own practices. Now, so if that is not in line with our own view or our own practice, then we start doubtful about them. Now I am not appreciating the colleagues, now not giving enough respect, or I am not helping them because I have lost the confidence. So when that is there, then as a community we can't grow, as a team we can't win, because there is no kind of a concord, there is no enough agreement. So as a team we can't win, we can't grow. And individually also, you feel a little unconfident. You feel a little uneasy by being in this group, in the team, in the community. So likewise, we can see these doubts can lead to this kind of inharmony or restlessness, doubts, conflicts within a group. So when such is available, then one can't quickly grow. So that's why sometimes Buddha emphasize samaggānaṁ taposukho. So when a group is really harmonized, they live in more harmony, and they live peacefully, then for them there's a good growth in the spiritual life. It is really possible to grow because they help each other, they see them with loving heart, loving eye, appreciative eye, and sort of greet them with happiness, or they are sort of grateful to each other. So likewise, that's kind of a peaceful community living is very, very interesting and very, very encouraging. So by the way, it is very rare. We can't say that we would get 100% support from everyone. So there may be people who are criticizing us, there may be people who are condemning us, belittling us, disrespectful. So all these different characters are there when we are living in a community. And sometimes it may be difficult than living alone. Sometimes we may prefer to live alone, maybe easy, but living in a community is not that easy because many different characters are there. So within each individual, various traits are working. So it's very difficult to say, I mean, confidently that we can forever we can be happy when we are living in a community. So time to time, various conflicts can happen, various ideas can happen, wrong, different viewpoints can happen. So if we are not handling them properly, if we are not properly discussing them, then it can lead to a conflict or disagreement, or even kind of split among the community. That is also possible. Now these are the ones actually Buddha mentioned with respect to cheto kila, kind of wilderness in the mind. So there's a significant influence coming from the vichikicca in those five. Directly doubtful about the Buddha, directly doubtful about the Dhamma, Sangha, and about one's own practice. And the other one is that one doesn't have a good mindset with the others. So one has resentful ideas about the others. So that is also cheto kila, a wilderness in the mind, which can have certain amount of doubts about the others. Now we can see, so this vichikicca is in a way making the mind really stuck. at a stage where you can't proceed. So how to overcome that? So one area is actually say reading, discussions, listening, good association. So these are, in a way, in general, we can see ways of overcoming doubts. And on the other hand, with the samatha practice, samadhi, when one develops samadhi, so that is where at that moment you can overcome doubt by giving proper attention to the meditation object. Say for example, you are practicing anapanasati. So when you are practicing anapanasati, if you are confident that you are experiencing in-breath and it is not out-breath, you are 100% sure about it. So at that very moment, there is no possibility of arising many other doubts. And you know that your mind is fairly agreed in that, fairly one-pointed in that particular object, and you have no other thinking, there is no any other doubts, everything else is abandoned, and what you know right now is mere the breathing. And in that breathing also, you know, I am currently experiencing in-breath, I am 100% sure about it. So the next moment, say you are experiencing the out-breath, and you are 100% sure about it, it is not the in-breath, and there are no any other things to think, and mind is fully concentrated on this breathing. So this concentration, the samatha practice actually in that sense help to overcome everything else, and just to fix your mind, just to experience your mind in one object, and in that also you are 100% sure. So what we call this quality as the vichara, the investigative quality. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. So they are the five jhana factors or the samadhi factors. And among them, vitakka is where you are applying your mind to a particular object. And vichara is there you properly do the investigation. You do a kind of a review. You do a kind of a examination, a search, so that you are 100% sure what you are experiencing. So till one has that confidence, till one have that continued investigation and assurance, then there is no possibility of arising any kind of a doubt, any kind of a vichikicca. So that is how in the samatha practice, one is overcoming vichikicca, and your mind is so confirmed, your mind is so directed and confident about what you are doing. So that is the samatha practice. And on the other hand, in the vipassana, actually that is also, you are combining in one sense this one-pointedness, and on the other hand, recognizing, investigating current phenomena. Say for example, you are practicing dhatu manasikara, elements meditation, and various element characteristics are available in the present moment. Roughness, hardness, softness, smoothness, say lightness, say hot, cold. So different characteristics are there. And you are capable of recognizing each and every phenomena clearly, distinctly, and you are sure about it. In that sense, you have, in one sense, you have overcome all the other distractions. And currently you are very sure among these many different characteristics what you are experiencing. You are not having any kind of perplexities. You are 100% sure what you are experiencing. And there also now you go to some subtle aspects. How this hardness arising? So what are the causes? How it is disappearing? How it is changing? So likewise in the vipassana practice, at one level you have this thorough investigation continuing, what we call as a dhamma vichaya continuing. So it is basically help to overcome various doubts. And another level, say you see the rising and passing away of various phenomena. So as you experience that, then again you are very sure that what you are experiencing, there is no any other distractions. So you are experiencing the true reality of various phenomena. All the conditioned phenomena is going through this arising and passing away, and you are experiencing that. You are sure about it. In that sense also, vichikicca has no possibility. And now say, as a result of this thorough investigation, you develop certain amount of dispassion. You don't want to adhere, we don't want to grasp. One has a kind of a revulsion about this whole process, dispassion about this whole process. As a result of that, suppose the mind is released. And once the mind is released, suppose that you know about it, you experience kind of a release. Previously, the mind was attached to various things, mind was associating various things, and as a result of that, fair amount of stress was there, fair amount of tension was there, but all that is gone. After some time, as a result of your practice, everything, all the stress disappeared, all the tension disappeared, so no objects at all in the mind, so mind is crystal clear. So that is another level. There are no doubts at all. So mind is simply experiencing freedom, a release. Now, if one is able to continue that, so there's a possibility one can trace how eye-making happens, how mind-making happens. So eye-centered thinking happens. So that will further give an opportunity to understand the dependent arising nature of all these different phenomena. Now one is going more deeper about the vipassana aspects, deeper teachings of the Buddha, so one can experience them. So as a result of that, various doubts can be overcome. So ultimately, no point of thinking that whether I exist or whether I am not existing, whether did I exist in the past or tomorrow am I going to exist. So that way of thinking is, one may understand, pointless, useless, because it promotes the sakkaya ditti. It promotes the wrong view. It promotes the wrong view one had, because that one had the prejudice, preconceived idea that there is a person. But through the practice, one understood that there is no person as such. There is no anything concrete. There is no anything substantial. So that is something that one understood through the practice, through the vipassana process. So likewise, when one is continuing one's practice, so this kind of thorough understanding may growing. That may lead to overcome all the doubts. So therefore it is said, the vichikicca, the doubt is completely possible to overcome. The fetter vichikicca is possible to overcome by becoming a stream winner, a sotapanna. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone has any questions, feel free to raise your hand, or you can also send them via the chat.
Today, our side also, no questions. Everything is clear, no doubts. So you can see the power of the Dhamma, no doubts at all. No one is talking. Everything is clear. So hope Jennifer, you also have no doubt, right?
I think it's more ignorance at this point. Hi, Mahisha. Feel free to unmute.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, and Avasarai Bhante.
Yeah.
I thought, because there are no questions, I will share one of my experiences right this morning, what happened.
Okay.
So I'm right now in Janakpur in Perth.
Uh-huh.
I came for a day participation. There's no particular like a retreat, but I came to do my meditation in Janakpur.
Uh-huh.
Coming in the morning and going in the night to the apartment where I stayed overnight. with the aunt. So I came from Melbourne with that aunt, one of my mom's friend.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to drive from Perth City to the Jana Grove Serpentine each morning and then going back in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, so I went with her back to the city, and then I told her, if you like, I can take you around the city, because she hasn't been in Perth at all. So I said, if you like, that's okay. We practice meditation in the morning, but that's okay if we can keep it and then walk around the city. That's good. So we walk and then get back to the hotel, and then she went to sleep and got back and said, oh, I have really a bad tummy ache. Maybe I walk too much in the city.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay. Let me see. Did you drink enough water?
Uh-huh.
Then she said, no, I was so interested to do the meditation, so I didn't drink much water.
Mm-hmm.
Then I said, maybe you better drink now.
Mm-hmm.
So she drank quite a lot of water. And then I stayed awake because she's like nearly 8 years, so I was thinking I'm responsible for her. So then I wait, and then I ask, are you settled now? Are you ready to sleep? And then she said, yeah, I'll go to sleep. And then she slept. Anyway, normally I'm very good at sleep, so I slept the whole night. And then my husband came and waked me up, and I was saying that it's time that you guys have to go. So then I woke up, and she was then meditating on the seat,
mm-hmm.
in the living area. So then I just let her wait, and then she was up, and she came to me, and then I asked, Auntie, what do you think? If you feel not well, it's okay. We'll stay in the apartment, and we both can meditate in the apartment because we have the practice now.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, no, I really want to go, because it's, you said that you're taking only today, so it will be the last day out of the 4 days, so I need to go. Then I said, no, it's not necessary. I'll take you tomorrow if you really want to go. So then she said, no, I want to go. Then I asked, how is your health? And she said, I think I haven't drink enough water, so that's why the problem. And then I said, yeah, I think so. And then I thought I will explain to her. And then I said, Auntie, normally when you're meditating, you know, there are chemicals in our body which breaks down, and the nasty chemicals break down, and they actually go, and they want to put that out.
Mm-hmm.
So if it didn't happen, probably that they just only in your tummy or whatever part of your body. So that's why it was very discomfort for you yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, she actually looked at me sharply and said, Mahesha, you're fabricating things. And then I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't explain that. And then I said, Auntie, I'm genuinely telling you, I learned this. When I start meditating, I learned about this, and I read about this, and I experienced when I don't drink enough water, and then I keep meditating for long hours in a day, actually my body getting, in my body, I'm getting the problem with my head, and actually head start getting weird, and I get a slight pain here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced it, so that's why I explained to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then she again said, oh, Mahesha, you talk too much. When you meditate, you shouldn't talk too much.
good.
Then I said, I'm sorry, I think yes, but I really want to make sure that you drink water enough today so that I can take you to the Jana Grove again, because I'm interested to meditate, you are interested to meditate. But if you're not well, I'm not happy to take you, because it's not good for the yogis there, because they are going to start the rain retreat today.
Huh.
And I know you're eager to go, but if you're getting sick, it's not good to go there, because we are going to disturb another 40 people there.
Mm-hmm.
And we both stay here. And then she said, now I'm going. I said, okay, please drink water if you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ran away off me. the room and said, I think you're enough talking. Okay. And then I quietly told to my husband, can you go and tell, okay, I'm going to take her. Because maybe she was worried that I'm not going to take her. Then I said, go and tell her that I'm going with her and then it's okay, everything. And then anyway, I got into the car and then she tried to, maybe she thought that I got angry. Actually, I haven't. I was concerned about her health.
Mm.
And then I thought, I will not talk because true, maybe I talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
So she got annoyed, so I thought, I will not talk. And then so we were coming, so it was really good. We came back up to the Jhana Grove, took about 1 hour, and we were like those very silent, and it's really good for both of us. So then we were telling about the fifth thing, about the doubt thing, that when we were working in a group, it's not a huge group.
Yeah.
So I was really with her only, and then we two were meditating separately.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I felt like it's very important that to understand. So I was testing myself and looking at me, my mind while I was talking. Have I got angry? Am I upset? Then I continuously thought, no, I was concerned about health because I have a responsibility. She's not my mother. She's one of my aunts. And she has her own kids looking after her back in Melbourne. So I got her here telling that I will look after her.
Mm.
So I had a responsibility. And then I was thinking, okay, maybe I talk too much, but that's also to explain her that it's not good to go because if the health is not deteriorating.
Mm.
And anyway, so it's a bit of like an experience, and I'm a bit of a like saying I got the chance to test myself at the same time. So I thought I'd like to share it since no one had the questions. And it had a bit of a relatedness to when you were talking about like when you were meditating with the group.
Mm.
That things would come up, and then you get a chance to check whether you have any doubts about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thank you, Bhante, for the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, when we are meditating, there is another subtle defilement or subtle vitakka, sukuma vitakka, that Buddha tells, that we either can be concerned about our own health too much, and we either can be concerned about someone else's health, or someone else's growth even. So sometimes paranuddayata vitakka is another subtle type of vitakka Buddha mentioned available, which is difficult to recognize because we are concerned about someone else, that I want to help another person, I want to teach another person, I am somewhat okay, but others are really in a difficult situation, let me help others, so I need to tell this to another person. So likewise, there are various thoughts can arise in disguise of kind of a compassion, kind of kindness. So that is something we need to recognize, and very difficult. I also can tell these things, but sometimes I also myself go through these various thoughts and sometimes continue to some extent, and it is our responsibility to calm down ourselves back in the silence. So we need to understand how mind is quite tricky and cheatful, and how introducing various different kinds of thoughts, promoting thinking, ultimately get into confusion. And if we start reacting, probably others also misunderstand us, others also feel that I am not meditating or maintaining silence, or I am disturbing. So many things can happen. So because we were thinking actually in terms of a compassionate way, but unfortunately it has gone to wrong extent, and others might feel it as kind of a burden to them. And also sometimes the other people also, even though we are doing it wholeheartedly, compassionately, they can't even understand that. They might think, okay, I'm angry, I'm too concerned, I'm overthinking. So that is also possible. So as you have mentioned, so many possibilities are there. I mean, it is not easy, as you said, that when we are living with others, how to maintain our practice, how to maintain goodwill among everyone. So it's a very, difficult task. And on the other hand, as you correctly mentioned, so that help us again back to look at ourselves. So is this situation promoting any kind of further defilements in me? Is it possible for me to quickly calm down myself, again exist, again settle in the silence? Or am I continuing with various doubts? Am I continuing with a lot of agitation in the mind? So these are, in a way, very good real opportunities to test ourselves. If we are simply living alone, we can't. Yeah, if we are simply living alone, we may not get these experiences. And when we are living with a community, so we get a lot of these kind of situations where we are not being properly respected, or we being ignored, or we interrupted them, or many different ways it can manifest. So ultimately, if we are able to turn it back to ourselves and connect it with our practice, then it will be a very helpful situation.
Yes, one day actually when she was telling, oh, Mahesh, are you know, fabricating and telling a story, then I actually looked at myself and I felt the sakkayaditti in me trying to come up like, oh, she's putting me but down or something like that, you know.
Yes.
When someone's saying, oh, what you're saying, I'm not taking, something like that, then I feel like, really? So I'm trying to, you know, explain something benefiting to you, but still you're, so my sakkayaditti started coming up and I was thinking, there you are, you're getting your sakkayaditti
exactly.
Now, and then you better figure it out.
Correct.
So I got that signal, so good in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
Now I can laugh, but at that time I was thinking, my goodness, how much you meditate, fast. Three days.
No, actually, this is
coming up. Maybe you get a chance, you know?
Actually, this is the place you are doing real meditation. Not at Jhana Grove, but on the way to Jhana Grove.
I realized that. Yeah, it is. So, in a way, as you mentioned, when you're meditating or whatever way you're meditating by yourself alone, you can see that defilements are actually like compressed and it's not there. It's not there, but it's actually compressed and it's just hiding. And when the opportunity comes, somehow it's creep out and try to dance around you. Unless you realize that it's trying to dance and then look at it and then, you know, try to like understand, okay, this is coming up. Then it keeps coming up, but when you understand it and look at it, actually it starts to again fading away. That's what I saw. But at the same time, in the corner of the mind, something come up saying like, oh my goodness, you again get caught, or oh my god, you again trapped in. So something like, it's like kind of a, like a, I don't know how to say, it's like kind of a dukkha.
Yes.
Like, or frustration.
Yeah.
I would say the proper word is frustration. You get some kind of a frustration. So much you try, but still you are having it, I think.
Yeah.
So something like that. So doubt and a frustration both together. Are you really working hard on this? Or why you're getting again this then? Something like that. Anyway, I think I need to work more and more on this.
Yeah. So actually, by thinking, sometimes we can't solve the problem, but calming down, keeping the mind silent, will give another approach.
Yeah.
Where the silence give a lot of answers.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mande.
Yeah.
And one more thing, Mande.
Yes. Go ahead.
Shall I say this?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm actually hoping to come to Sri Lanka next week.
Uh-huh.
So probably I'll write to you as well. And I'm just wondering whether there are retreats going on, because we don't get much information from Priyanka nowadays about meditations or Zoom connections about it.
Uh-huh.
So I have no idea about the programs you're having. So I would like to know whether I can participate in one of the programs.
Actually, in August, there is 10-day retreat starting from 13th. That is Damrivi retreat conducted by Mrs. Suranjani. And then there is 5 days retreat starting on 25th, conducted by Dinesha. So those are the two retreats lined up for
what
August.
What about in September month?
September, again 10 days retreat by on starting on 10th Udayani Tilakaratna, Miss.
Okay.
And then another one, yeah, that is starting on 10th September. And 23rd, 6 days retreat, starting on 23rd to 28th.
10th one, I would look at, but then I'll talk to the lady.
Yeah, so you can actually always refer our website. So there in our website, there is a meditate with us, yeah, meditate with us, retreats, residential retreats. There the whole description is available.
Okay, I will look at it and I will contact with
them. Okay.
All right, okay. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Okay, there was Sanai.
All right, thank you. Darshika, for the next question.
Can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes.
I just want to know, in the last retreat, Sukhamutta Sutta, you mentioned where the metta meditation can be done in the Vidarshana way. Can you just explain it again, please?
Yeah. Actually, two areas, two possibilities are there. The one possibility is that when we develop metta meditation, so you come to a level where you can recognize the metta feeling. Say you are spreading metta to someone, and by ignoring that person, you can put your attention back to your heart and recognize that metta feeling. It's a very pleasant, outward, a very soft kind of a feeling is there. Now, if you are able to recognize that feeling as a feeling, assume that it's a pleasant feeling. So it's a form of what you call a pleasurable feeling. There are three types of major feelings: sukhavedana, dukkhavedana, adukkama sukhavedana. So this we can say is a sukha feeling, as a pleasant, pleasurable type of feeling, born out of compassion or born out of metta, loving kindness. So now you ignore all the conceptual people, names, men, women, all that, but you recognize the feeling. You recognize the feeling. So what happened to this feeling? So is it how it is behaving? Is it existing for a long time or is it disappearing quickly? So after disappearing that, what happens to your mind? So likewise, now you start another level of practice, turning your attention back to the mind. So that is very much like, you can tell it as very much Vedana Anupassana, or you can tell it as Chitta Anupassana, or even Dhamma Anupassana. So turning it back to that level is another one entry point to Vipassana. You are not conventionally simply using metta in a conventional way. Rather, now you are changing your attention back to your heart, your mind, and recognizing it as a true reality arising and passing away, changing everything. So that is one possibility. And the go ahead.
So you are still thinking on that line, not thinking.
No, so at that level, at that level, you need to stop thinking. Suppose you were using a phrase like "Mama Nidukke," may you be well, may you be happy. So that kind of phrase we typically use. So when you are turning your back, your attention back to the body or to the mind, you need to stop that phrase. You need to calm down the mind, relax the mind, concentrate the mind, and to your mind, and that concentrated silent mind is what do the investigation. And the next point is, we are assume that you are a good practitioner in metta meditation, and you are able to experience a complete opening in yourself, where you are coming to the metta cheto vimutti, complete freedom of mind through loving kindness. So if you are there, if you are able to maintain that, so while being there, you can look at the mind, and you can use that as a foundation for developing vipassana. You don't need to practice anapanasati or say Dhatu Manasikara or anything else, you can simply use that as a foundation. Keep that opening, that freedom as freedom in your mind, but allowing your mind to freely work, to freely think, and that thoughts now you need to recognize. So is it what kind of thought is available? Because you already have experienced the freedom. So with respect to that freedom, you need to recognize what is a thought is like, what is a feeling is like. So that's another level of, actually another little advanced level of turning into vipassana at a higher level of metta meditation.
So also, can you mix, like when you are doing the anapana, say, because I suffer with pain due to a neurological problem, so I still get sometimes severe pain, but I control it with the pain, the vedana anapana, but still because it was like vesha, I've done the metta to myself. So is it okay if I change it? Because is it okay to mix it?
That's also fine. So I mean, you are doing anapanasati and metta together, but I didn't get the point.
No, sorry, I do the anapanasati and vedana anupassana when I get the pain.
Right.
But sometimes, and it's much control compared to, because I suffer with Parkinson, and I have controlled it to a fair extent. But sometimes still I get the pain so severe that I feel just tears come, and then I recognize that. And stop it then and there. But is it okay if I do
metta?
The metta vipassana, I'm asking just to start. I have not done that, mixed both together.
Right.
But because still I feel there might be some kind of ill will. So is it okay if I do the feel, like turn it into the feeling?
Correct. I think it's all right. Because, you know, even Buddha recommended what we call as panidhaya bhavana and apanidhaya bhavana. So when you do apanidhaya bhavana, so that is the vipassana meditation, satipatthana, there are sometimes it feel like kind of dry and difficult because there is no joy in the mind. So it's very, I mean, you know, you feel like difficult to continue. At that time, you can turn it to some samatha meditation. So Buddha say it as a panidhaya bhavana, where your mind find it interesting, pleasing, there's a kind of a consolation to the mind. So it's all right. So you do a little bit of metta, turn your attention to yourself and love yourself. I mean, have some self-compassion.
The feeling.
Feeling. And
because
then,
it's in the vedana itself, I can turn that into, because when it's very severe, it's easy for me to get into something like metta, rather than be in the anidassana state, because still I have like maybe occasional occasions compared to the at the start, where I still suffer real severe pain. So then it's something like that is easy for me.
Right.
So that's why I thought whether I could change the feeling and go from vidashana, turn it into vidashana.
Yeah, so I think it's okay. It's good. I mean, it's a good. I mean, it will give you a kind of a new opening also. Because you don't need to strictly adhere to vedana anupassana. It's also a very good one. But time to time, having that kind of a change will add a kind of a diversification to your practice, and it may give another aspect, another opening.
So like that. So the mudita, so I can think that. For myself that I've achieved, and
that is also possible. Yeah, that is also possible. And actually Buddha mentioned, even if there is no pain, even if there is no any that kind of severe pain or any of those, still you can incorporate metta into your vipassana meditation. probably you can read the Metta Sutta available in the Bodhyanga Samyutta. So there Buddha emphasize Metta Sahagatena Sati Sambodhyangam Bhaveti Viveka Nisitam Viraga Nisitam Nirodha Nisitam Vasagga Parinami. Metta Sahagatena Dhamma Vichaya Sambodhyangam Bhaveti Viveka Nisitam Viraga Nisitam Nirodha Nisitam Vasagga Parinami. So likewise, he is adding this Metta Sahagatena, that prefix Metta Sahagatena, to each and every practice phrase at a higher vipassana level, where one is experiencing the detached mind, where the mind is not entangled anywhere, not grasped anywhere, and one is experiencing the freedom. But he likes to he promotes blending it with vipassana, blending it with metta, blending it with mudita. It adds the kind of a beauty, or you know, making the vipassana process a beautiful, pleasant, joyful practice.
Because anyway, when I do, that's what comes into my mind. Viveka Nisitang, Viraga Nisitang, Nirodha Nisitang, and Pratisnitha, it always keeps on coming. So I do it literally. So I incorporate it, that would be good. Another question, can I take a few minutes? About the Shunyatava and the Anidarsana and Aparitya, that's the way it goes, proceed?
Yeah, we can say so. Yeah, because when you are experiencing emptiness, so there is no object as such in the mind, so mind is fairly free. So you are resting on the calmness, relax, unattached state of mind. So we can say the mind is experiencing the emptiness. So
anatma state, maybe, no?
Sorry?
That's anatma.
Yeah, definitely. There is no I making, there is no mind making, there is no self as such. So I does not exist. You don't feel yourself or ego strongly at that time, but kind of a very soft mere experience is going on. And there we can say the consciousness is not entangled with anything. So it doesn't have any image, feeling, or it's very much like the mind is resting. Mind is at its ground level. Mind is at its base level, at the baseline. So that is, we can say, the consciousness is not established. That is where the apatittita vijnana.
So they are all three similar,
very similar, very similar, very similar, but looking at from different angle.
It's like a goes deeper, like to start with Shunyata, then Anidarsana, and Apatittita.
I think these things are similar, but looking at the practice from different angles. Say, Sunyata is where we say, okay, there is no ongoing person, there is no ongoing self or soul or anything substantial. So that is one way of looking at it. And when we are saying Apatittita, so that means the consciousness is not established anywhere. So it has no object as such. There is no any, say, primary object or any other alternative object, or nothing is there. So basically mind is very much like floating without having anything to pay attention, but fully aware.
Yes.
So that is where it is unestablished. And on the other hand, it doesn't show anything in the mind. So there are no any signs, marks, perceptions, any scars or anything in the mind, any stains in the mind. So it is anidarsana. So nothing is represented in the mind. So it's very much like the pure water. There is no coloring, there are no patches, no oils, sediments or anything is there, just the pure water. So we can say it is anidarsana. It doesn't represent anything.
So these three can come in different, it's the same.
Same, but you are looking at from different angle. At one time you look at the non-self angle. At another time you look at the empty, unestablished, objectless angle. At another time you simply see the clarity. There is nothing to hinder the mind. So it's pure, transparent, so something like that.
Thank you so much for your explanation. It was really good. Terwan Sanai.
Yeah, Terwan Sanai.
Okay, I'd like to invite Fumi Dinan for the next question.
Bante, Terwan Sanai. I have a quick question regarding the scheduling of your retreats for next year. I'm planning a trip to Sri Lanka next year. Do you normally have retreats in May, close to the Vesak time, or not?
Let me see. This time, actually, this year, we had three retreats in May.
I see. Yeah. Because I want to schedule it so that I get the chance of attending at least one of them.
Mm-hmm. Possible.
So that is why I want...
Should be possible, but still we haven't scheduled it.
I have never attended a retreat at Nitidigala in Sri Lanka, so I am just planning on doing it, maybe a short retreat or whatever. I have a problem. I can't do walking meditation without shoes.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not even sure whether I'll be eligible because I have to wear shoes. I mean, at least slippers, I have a foot condition. So, that is a bit of a tricky problem, but they, so...
Yeah, no, actually, that you... Because we have the indoor walking facilities, so you can use them.
Is that so? Okay,
yes.
I would really love to find out more details about it. How do I go about doing that, Bhante?
No, actually, still the next year... Retreats are not scheduled yet, so probably you need to wait some time till Priyanka and others schedule the next year retreats.
But I can assume that there might be one.
Sure, definitely,
right?
definitely. There will be ones, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But another thing, Bhante, they were discussing that Metta Bhavana be converted to Vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, the way I do the metta bhavana, I do it in a directionally.
Mm.
I give metta to myself and I do in directions.
Uh-huh.
That way. Even that way is okay, right?
Yeah. Once you do directional metta, so they are, say you are directionally saying, okay, all beings in this particular direction, be happy and all that. And after that, you can stop that phrase and recognize that feeling.
The feeling,
that,
I see.
That quality, that quality. So that is where you are turning your attention to the vipassana. So you are recognizing a true phenomena. You give up the conceptual things and you simply recognize the true phenomena as a feeling. Currently, what is what you feel and what happened to that feeling.
Right. So you just... phrases don't do, but just cultivate the feeling.
Yeah.
So
not really
that
cultivating.
Become like.
Not really.
Will that become then?
Yeah, that's the thing. We are not cultivating either. We simply recognize what's happening to that feeling.
Yeah, I mean that's what I used the wrong word.
Right.
But we just recognize what's going on.
Exactly.
But you observe that.
Yes. That's it.
Tell me more about how to make it vipassana, Bhante, please.
No, thing is, the moment that you look at it objectively, okay, this is mere feeling.
Right.
So, what happened to this feeling? How it is the intensity of that feeling reducing, or is the intensity of that persisting or changing, and all that? You do a kind of a soft, thorough investigation to that particular feeling. So that itself is vipassana. Then suppose there are no thoughts and that feeling also fade away and there is nothing available in the mind, then you may even engage to the level of emptiness.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Bhante. I have not... I think I missed that Dhamma talk that you gave.
I didn't give a Dhamma talk on that. Probably... Yeah, that Dhamma talk was in the past retreat. Actually, Bhante, Dhammajiva and myself combiningly did the retreat and Bhante Dhammaji was absent for one day. At that time, I have to cover about that, what we call, Abhyapajja Ramo Hoti. There, I included that.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Thank you very much. I so much appreciate all the guidance and the talks. Something that we cannot get from, living in this part of the world. Therwan Saranai, much better to you.
Yeah, Therwan Saranai.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Priya for the next question.
Therwan Saranai, Bhante.
Yes.
Bhante, I wanted to ask, when I do meditation, not sitting or no, actually not during meditation, during daily activities, when mind get some turbulence, I used to, talk to myself like it is impermanent, this and this and that, and it's not mine, it's not me. But it's temporarily suspended, though it's temporarily go down. But today, I did direct observation during the day, and I observed feeling as well as emotion, and it worked really well. So this is actually I haven't done that quite often, mm-hmm. but today after you talked to give direction to Mahesha, it became clear to me that I've been doing it all wrong all this time. Not during meditation. During meditation, I do the direct of observation, but I thought I didn't have enough, settled mind to do the direct observation during daily activities. But I figured out that I still could do that. And but sometimes I can carry away with it. But if it is too intense, what should I do without direct observation, without going to direct observation?
Mm-hmm. You can turn your attention to the body also. That's another alternative available, because okay. all that mental agitation or any feeling, emotion has a counterpart activity going on in the body. So if we are not confident about directly confronting the thought or emotion, you can look at the body. So what are the changes happen in the body? So any kind of tension available, any kind of suffering available, any kind of pain available in the body. So that is another way of looking at it.
Bhante, when I say emotion, actually I see it in the body. Sensations or heaviness in the head or something like that.
Okay, then another option is that if you feel that you can't put your attention onto that pain, onto that heaviness, so how about finding a place where there is no heaviness? Within the body, say you are paying attention to something else, entirely different thing. Say the heaviness or tightness is available in the head, for example. That is tightness, there's a headache. Now, directly looking at it may feel like intense and difficult to bear. Then probably you can change your attention entirely to rising and falling, where the object is in the middle of the body and it is a smoothing process, so that mind feel relaxed, calm, quiet, because your attention is drawn to something entirely different. So that is also possible.
I see. Yeah, sometimes I can actually watch emotions and how it change, like even sensations. Sometimes I can, but not all the time. So it's really good advice. So I can put it somewhere else, not where it happens. Yeah.
No, by the way, it is a kind of an escape mechanism. I mean, I don't like to really emphasize that or to promote that, because if we are capable of looking at the pain as pain, so that give us the direct experience, that give us more understanding, rather than simply ignoring that and keeping our attention to something else. But that something else is also some kind of a process, like, say, for example, rising and falling. By keeping our attention in rising and falling, we are not completely deluding us. Rather, we are giving another opportunity to look at a different phenomena. Instead of a difficult phenomena, now we are looking at a different phenomena, which is much easier to look at. So therefore, less harm, or we are not losing anything.
Yeah, one more thing, Bhante. I listened to one of your sermons. It is by not Nivene Nivema, the other, my medic of the mind.
Uh-huh.
So in that one, you it was very beautifully beautiful sutta, and you mentioned that we can take any couple in the dependent origination, and the thing that came to my mind is that even though we are doing all these five aggregates and this and that, ultimately feelings, feelings of all these things, like feeling form or anything, the dislike and like of feeling, which is tanha, it's very clear, right? It's when we observe it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Now, when there's a pleasant feeling, when there is a pleasant feeling, there's a possibility of arising a desire to that.
Yeah, so we are doing all these things. We are either trying to avoid things or get attracted to things because of feelings, right?
Mm. Yeah, we can say so. Yeah, we can narrow down like that. So feeling is one prominent factor. Actually, it depends on the character. And for some people, their most prominent attraction is the feeling. For some others, their most prominent attraction may be various perceptions. So they are driven by the perception. So likewise, even our own life can change these priorities.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Very clear. Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.
All right, thank you. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question.
Teruvan Sarnai, Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you so much for your talk. It was very good because it just applied to you. I have this doubt about myself, and for the I did a retreat, a 3-day Zoom one, and it was with that monk that I'm doing the walking meditation. He has worked at, I mean, he was also at Mitrigala. He often talks about Bhante and about Satipatthana and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And now you know the monk I'm going to now. I did the walking meditation retreat, and it was, I think it was good in the sense that I'm getting what he calls nirasayen satya pihito vima patule, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the word he uses in Sinhalese. I've been getting that for a while, and I always, I just want to make sure I understand properly because my Sinhalese is very poor. So I double check with you or with Bhante or with Kusrudha Mahamdro, somebody else, just to make sure in English also. I said, if it's you, of course, I can ask you, but if you're not available and it happens to me, I ask someone to write to me, write it for me in Sinhalese and get an answer. So basically, I increased the Iriyapata Pabba, and it's much stronger in the sense that I am now getting it more on, more mindful on things which I am doing in my daily life also. Now, this is the doubt that I, this is the one that's really giving me this self-doubt and whether I'm doing this right. Because he tells us not to do sitting meditation, that we can easily he wants me to do. No, I shouldn't say he wants me, because he doesn't. I don't talk to him because he thinks English. But the instructions he gives is not to do sitting meditation.
Uh-uh.
And all to do this, right? So that's what is bothering me, because I am doing sitting whenever I can. Now, I had some difficulties with the sitting because I didn't have a place. I was walking and doing the meditation outside, but I can't because the area we live in, it's not safe anymore. So it's not safe because we have bears coming in. So now what I have been doing is I go to a nunnery close by. Well, not close by, but close by for me. It's a 2-hour walk for me to walk there, but in the car it's 10 minutes for the sitting meditation, and if I can for the walking meditation, it's safer. If not, I have to do it on the main road now, right, to get a bigger stretch. So basically, all those logistics I can take care of. Basically, when I do only this walking meditation, I get the niraya saying satya pavatima.
So that means you are maintaining your mindfulness with less effort, or even without any effort. So very natural. Natural maintenance of mindfulness.
Yes, on my feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yes, I did this retreat. It was like 4 days of good retreat. The fifth day, I was interrupted because of I had to take some commitments of my children, so I had to stop it. Right. So it was a 5-day retreat, but 4 days I could do it. And it went really well. And so that was fine. Now, I couldn't go to the nunnery during that time because of this. So I did the walking meditation the way he wanted. And I also found that sometimes, not in this retreat, but sometimes when I do the retreat with a lot of walking meditation, I'm doing the effortless walking in addition to the effortless mindfulness. But it doesn't last only for that time. So I don't get that at home. Now, at home for me to do it, it's a little bit difficult because of the fact that I do it on the main road, on the side of the road, to get a longer... I do it because of Nirayasaya Nirdima. I walk for a lot now, sometimes 1 hour. Like I said, that day I walked home because I had no ride. It was almost 2 hours. But I don't have to put any effort for the mindfulness coming on my feet anymore. Whether I'm walking or whether I'm doing anything, I look at myself and I see that if I'm walking and doing something, I'm getting it nirayase. If I'm really at a very good retreat where I'm not in my house, one time or two times, I got what I'm calling it, I don't know, nirayasaya avidhima. That is in addition to the fact that I'm, the mindfulness is there, everything is there, but it's like I'm not walking, I'm floating. But I don't get it normally unless I'm doing a retreat, and it has to be a very safe retreat for me to do it. I say that because if I try in my home, I made a nice walking path in my garden and a nice walking place outside, but now we are getting bears coming into our garden and into the backyard or near the backyard, so it's not safe for me to do meditation there definitely, because you don't know when the bear will surprise you. So now that's why I'm going here and there for it now. Now basically, my thing is that because of the fact that now I have a place available to go, I am trying to do both, but then he doesn't want me to do both because he says I can go into samatha because I'm not me, like I shouldn't say I, because it's not like he's telling it to me, but his instructions are very strict. And so then when I do it, I'm getting this torn feeling inside that I'm not following the instructions, but then I know that it is good for me to do both, because just because I'm doing Iryapatha, it doesn't mean that I shouldn't do breathing awareness, right? Is there any rule that just because I'm doing Iryapatha that it is wrong for me to do breathing awareness?
Actually, you better try both. So walking alone is not necessary. I mean, you can do both, walking and sitting. Jennifer, she seems disconnected. Yeah, she seems disconnected.
Yeah.
So shall we wind up then, since we got long time?
That sounds good. I
yeah.
thought it was my audio.
Yeah.
I lost audio.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Then. So we have spent almost 2 hours today. So we'll wind up the session today and we share the merits. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Akasatta ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasatta ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasatta ca bhummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo.
Idam vo nyati
nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mamre mabba samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.